Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview proven entrepreneurs for an audience of real entrepreneurs. And when a PR agency contacted me and said, hey, Andrew, do you want to interview the author of a new startup book? I said, no. To be honest, I didn't even look at it. And they said, wait, this is the Startup Playbook by two authors. One of them is Rajat Bhargava. I said, wait a minute. Yes, where? This is not just a guy who has an idea for how to start a business. This is a guy who started multiple businesses. And yes, where I specifically remember because there was a period there where suddenly I was mousing over email that I would get from people and it would be a Yesware URL. And I looked up what Yesware was and I realized, oh, they want to know if I opened up their email, if I clicked on it and all that. I thought, this is brilliant. And so I got a couple of people on my team to use Yesware and we talked about it. And so I said, yes, let's have him on. Roger's got to come on here and do this interview. And so he said, sure, I'll do the interview and I'll talk to you about my entrepreneurial journey because that's what Mixergy is about. But he said, I don't want to talk about Yesware. Frankly, it wasn't my idea. I was a co-founder. So we said, you know what? Usually that would mean forget it. Let's just go back to the drawing board or something else. But this guy started so many companies that frankly, any one of them that we talked about would be an interesting conversation. So I'm happy to talk about what he's working on now. We're basically talking about a legit entrepreneur with the, Roger, you're too nice of a guy considering how much you've accomplished. You could be an asshole. So we're going to talk about his latest company, the one that he's running now. It's called Jump Cloud. Let me read the one sentence description that I got from him and then tell you how I would describe it. Jump Cloud securely connects people to their IT resources. I think a better explanation is one that comes from an example that I have from a friend of mine. I get together with my friend on Monday. I say, what were you up to this weekend? He always does fun things, but he said, man, I had to let go of this guy on Friday. The whole weekend, I was hunting down every service that we gave him access to, Dropbox, Google Drive, this, that, to make sure that we removed him because otherwise it's dangerous. I said, the whole weekend was burned doing it. And I thought about it and I said, now when you hire someone, you're going to have to do the same thing in reverse and give him a new computer and set him up and get the Wi-Fi and all that. Well, if he had Jump Cloud for his 10 people operation at the time, now it's growing, he would have an easy one-click
deprovisioning.
Deprovisioning. Why do I blank out on that word? One-click deprovision and then an easy way to add them on. That's what Jump Cloud is here to do. And even though the guy is super successful, when he tried to raise money for it, he kept getting turned down for a reason that we'll talk about later. I'm going to find out how he built up this business and so much more in this interview that's sponsored by two great companies. The first will help you do marketing automation right. It's called ActiveCampaign. If you're doing email, you've got to understand how this works. And the second is the company that will help you hire your next great developer. It's called TopTal. First, Rajat, welcome.
Thank you. That's an amazing intro. Thank you very much. Far too kind.
Thanks. You guys do such great content marketing. Let me ask you something. Was there ever a period when you did like become a jerk when you said, I have this world figured out, forget you? Honestly.
I don't think so. I hope not.
No?
No, I hope not. But I guess you'd have to ask my family and my friends. I hope I was never a jerk to them. But yeah, I don't know if you need to be a jerk, regardless of whether you've been successful, haven't been successful, or whatever you have done, right? It doesn't matter. So I think just being kind in general is a good thing to live by. So
what's the biggest success of all of these businesses? What's the one that's done the best?
Well, from what standpoint, right? So, if you said from the standpoint of money, return on time, I'd say Service Metrics probably.
One year deal.
It was 1999. It was 98 to 99. It was an 18-month deal that was acquired by Exodus for $280 million. And then, the stock price floated up to almost $1.4 billion. So, from a money standpoint, that was an amazing deal. But from a standpoint of, relationships, people who we helped start their careers and built, they went off to go build other companies. You could look at companies like Interliant or even StillSecure. Those companies, people have gone on to do great things. So it's sort of like, what's the criteria that you're using to judge success on it, right?
Jump Cloud, what's the revenue that you guys have now?
So we don't disclose revenue, but private. So, but the company's been growing pretty fast over the last few years. I think we've hit on a problem that's a core pain point.
Can you give me a ballpark metric that just gives people a sense of scale? How big are you?
Yeah, so I think the best way to think about scale is we've publicly announced that we're going to hire about 50 people this year. We started the year at about 70 people, and we'll be at about 120 at the end of the year. So that gives people, I think, just a general scale of the size of the business.
How much money have you guys raised?
So public information on that is about $37 million.
Okay. I want to understand how you built up this business, but I've got to ask you this question that's on my mind. Dude, why bother writing a playbook on startup? Why not run your company? Usually it's the guys who've never done jack, or frankly, like some of your investors who are trying to raise awareness for and credibility within the entrepreneurial space who do this books. Why would you write the startup playbook?
Yeah. So Will, who's a board member at Jump Cloud, and I've done a lot of Will Herman, who I've done a lot of different things with. We just kept getting the same questions from entrepreneurs over and over again. And we love working with entrepreneurs. We've invested in a lot of companies. We have advised a lot of companies. It's just fun. It's part of who we are. And so we finally just said, we've got to stop answering these same questions, right? It's got to be that hour of time or hour and a half of time we spend with somebody. It has to be more valuable. So let's get all the basic questions out of the way, because we can put them down in a book, and let's get to the next level conversation. The one that's much harder, where there's the nuances, the trade-offs,
what's the most important question for you to get out there so that people don't ask you, but is valuable for them to know the answer to?
That's a great, great question. You know, the most common question is about raising money. I mean, hands down, that's the most common question. You know, when am I ready to raise VC money? Can I raise VC money? Can I raise angel money? How much can I raise? It's almost always about that. And we have to sort of dial people back and say, let's slow down. Let's focus on the business first. Because if we focus on the business, the money will come, right? The consequence of having a great business is you can raise money, you can do a bunch of things. But if we don't focus on the core aspects of the business, then it's very hard to raise money. You can get lucky, but in general, you know, our advice has been, let's focus on the business first, the money will come second.
Okay, so can we, as we go through your story, if you can identify points of the story that illustrate your message about how to focus on the business, can you illustrate those, and then we'll send people to the book to get more?
Absolutely, for sure.
Okay, so I just want to touch on how you got started as an entrepreneur, because your first business was NetGenesis, right? And we're going to jump to Jump Cloud in a moment, but just to get a sense of where you got started. I went on to Brad Feld's personal blog. He said that this was his very first angel investment, right?
Yeah, it was.
And the idea behind NetGenesis was?
It was basically, so when we started NetGenesis, it was sort of late 93, early 94. So I'm dating myself. It's a long, long time ago. But this was when the first browser came out. So, and we were at MIT, and my co-founders and I immediately jumped on it. And the co-founders, a couple of the co-founders had been developing websites even by that point in time. So, you know, in the first few months. And so the idea was, hey, let's go build a business that has the web at the center of it. And ultimately, we iterated through a bunch of different things. So we started as a consulting firm. We did a few different products, but then we finally landed on sort of the core of the business, which was basically figuring out when people come to your website, what are they doing on your website? Today, this is like Google Analytics. It's kind of viewed as, you know, something no big deal. Everybody's got it. But back then, it was, you know, kind of the nascent start of the industry at that.
That was called Net Analysis. That was that product,
Net
right?
Net Analysis.
You guys also had a form maker, Net Form.
We did. Yeah. Yeah.
You had Net Thread. I'm looking at my notes from researching you. What was Net Thread?
Net Thread. So it was basically, think of it as a almost like a discussion group thread kind of, you know, what we know as forums today. It was, you know, called threaded conversations back then. So, you know, you can see sort of in the period of time what the evolution of the thinking was, right?
Yeah. So, all these tools for what were called at the time webmasters.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. We created something called the Webmasters Guild way back when. So,
Webmasters Guild was what, a connection of websites that promoted each other?
No, it was actually just almost like what you would call a meetup group now.
Okay.
Right? A meetup group of webmasters. That's it. So, it's like
you raised money from Brad Feld, who I guess you guys went to school together, so you knew each other.
We didn't go to school. He actually was guest lecturing at a class that I took,
I see.
And I went up to him afterwards and said, "Hey, I've got this idea," And he said, let's get together. And then, you know, we just sort of hit it off. And he said, hey, you know, can I get involved? And we said, we'd love to have you involved. We're honored to have you involved because, you know, we didn't know anything about what we were doing. So it was a totally different time to start companies.
I've got a blog post here where he talked about why he left the company. Do you remember why he left?
Yeah, totally. We left for the same reason. You know, it's a fascinating experience, right? You're 21, 22 years old. Venture capital at that time is a totally different thing. And, you know, we raised money from venture capitalists and we didn't ask a lot of questions, didn't really understand what that meant. They came in and they said, hey, great. Glad to have you here. We're going to hire a new CEO. And so we're like, wait a second. We didn't talk about that before the investment was made. They're like, that's okay. We're still going to hire a new CEO. So, you know, at that point I said, well, I don't think this is the right spot for me. And Brad decided it wasn't the right spot for him.
Because they pushed you out, he said he didn't feel comfortable staying with you, with the company.
I think, you know, I mean, it was sort of my first probably lesson in a connection with somebody that felt so deeply about me and I felt deeply about him. I mean, you know, this is a person making a business decision for themselves on money, if you will. And they're saying, no, I don't want to take this money. I believe in our relationship much more. I think we're going to do a lot of stuff together. And, you know, here we are, you know, whatever, 25 years later, and we've been working nonstop for 25 years. So, it was a unbelievable lesson for me of, you know, loyalty and kindness and caring that you don't often see anymore.
And you know what? And the truth is, actually, I would even suggest that today you see that a little bit more than you used to, because today we understand the value of the entrepreneur is probably stronger than the current business. And at least if they have one successful idea, they're more likely to have another. And so people will bank on it. Back then, there wasn't the sense you were disposable. Nope. It was an idea, right?
The power dynamics were completely different, right? So the power was with the VCs. Today, you could argue it's much more with the entrepreneur, but it's also more balanced than what it was.
So I'm curious about where you got the idea for Jump Cloud.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I had this idea for Jump Cloud probably almost 10 years ago, you know, in 2007, 2008. I don't know why it came to me, but this concept of directory services and how do you connect people to their various IT resources. And it was in the context of maybe we were implementing something similar. And I just sort of was questioning, why are we doing it this way? But it wasn't the right time to build the business. And so the idea stuck in the back of my mind. And then, you know, as we sort of evolved over the years, it popped back up. And it popped back up in sort of the 2014 timeframe, 13 timeframe. And I said, wow, I remember this idea. This one seems really interesting. The market's really changed. The dynamics and infrastructure.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but when you say, just so we're following along, when you say, why are we doing it this way? How were we doing things back then that you felt wasn't right?
Yeah. So basically there was one platform to do directory services. There's really two, but one was open source and the other was a commercial product and everybody used the commercial product.
And they were.
And it was a product called Microsoft Active Directory. And
so you know what? I was on Reddit, like deep in like these discussion boards of people comparing you to Active Directory. And the argument that people made was it's just a flawed comparison that you guys aren't the same.
Yeah, we aren't really the same, but we sort of accomplish the same function. And what we've really tried to do is to say, well, Active Directory is this incredible product that's been around for 20 years and they've done an amazing job with it. Every company just about uses it. And, but over time that product was very Windows centric. And we said, well, the world's not really all that Windows centric anymore. You've got G Suite, you've got AWS, you've got Mac, you've got Linux, you've got all these different, web applications out there. So it doesn't really connect.
So what they had was single sign-on largely for Windows and desktop software. Is that how it worked?
Yeah. I mean, it's really sort of very Windows-centric. It works beautifully in a Windows environment. And so our position was, hey, what about for all those companies that don't have a Windows-centric environment? Don't they need the same type of capability? And why isn't that delivered from the cloud? Why do you have to have servers on-prem anymore? And so that was sort of the thought process between, you know, how to come up with this idea.
Okay. And the free version or the open source software that was out there was?
It was called Open LDAP. So one of our advisors, Tim House, created the LDAP protocol, which then subsequently somebody leveraged that protocol to create the Open LDAP server. And that's been an amazing product too. Been around for probably almost 20 plus years, 30 plus mm-hmm. years now.
But that's the kind of thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't understand this space as well as your previous company, but I would need a server in my office, in my possession, in order to run that. Am I right?
Yeah, you need a server in your office or in your data center. But yeah, you have to have that. So
that's really the problem. Either I'm in this desktop Windows world, which is changing as you're thinking about the space, or I have to have hardware and have to get into installing this new thing.
Yeah. That's right.
And you said there's got to be a better way than that.
There's got to be a better way.
Yeah. Is that how you come up with your ideas? Is it what's bothering me? What's problematic? Or is it different?
You know, I think there's a couple different ways. And we talk about this a lot in the book. And we basically said there's probably three major areas or three different ways. And there's probably more, but three ones that we should talk about. One is personal problems. So, you know, I'm going through the day and I have this personal problem and I want to solve it. So I'm not sure Jump Cloud fits into that because I'm not an IT administrator. But and then there's problems that you see that others have. So you talk to your customers, you talk to your friends, you talk to businesses. They say, hey, I've got this problem. And you say, well, I think I can solve that problem. I've got some ideas around that. And then the third area that we talk about in the book is just doing research. There's a lot of businesses that have been started where you just do a lot of research and you don't really have any personal connection to that problem, but you find out that there's a gap in the market and then you go fill it. So
which businesses have you started with research as the basis?
I've never started one with research. I've just heard of other people doing it and read of other people doing it. But
is there one that stands out for you of someone who's especially famous for? Because there's a problem with that once you do research to come up with a product, as you tell your story, you can't say, I researched it to see where the money was, or I researched it to see where you have to come up with a story that then explains why this is needed in the world. And that takes priority, right?
I think your origin story is a little bit different, right? I mean, I don't know if FedEx was an example of something like that, because I think he was doing a lot of research. I don't know if he felt the pain of that or... I don't think that concept really existed. So it wasn't like he was talking to other people necessarily. So, you know, that could be an example. There's probably other examples too.
You talked to our producer and you said there are trends though also that supported this. And one of the trends was consumerization of IT. Talk about how you saw that.
Yeah. You know, consumerization of IT has been a fantastic sort of, you know, game changer in IT over the last 10 years. It means that every group, every department, every person in the organization can go purchase what they need to do their jobs, right? So you can go get Dropbox or Box or Salesforce or whatever it is, and you can do that yourself. You don't have to have IT do that for you. You can go down to the Apple store and buy a Mac. You can buy a Dell box, right? And then you can put Linux on there, or you can do whatever you want these days. And before, that was all the domain of IT. So with all that change, how does IT still remain relevant, and how can they actually do their jobs in that type of environment? I think it's a huge challenge for these folks.
Right, because there is no way. They could say, you can't bring in your own computer. I think VCs do that, right? They say, you can have your own computer, but if you're working for us, we need a separate computer for our work. At least my friends are working for VCs are like that.
Yeah.
But what they can't do is say, you have to use this Microsoft software. You cannot go try Google Drive or Google, right? It's really tough to enforce a non-Dropbox policy when Dropbox is such a good fit. And so people are naturally going to use it. And you said there needs to be a way to control it and delete those accounts. Is that it?
It's to manage those accounts, delete those accounts.
Tell me about managing. I keep saying, provision and deprovision. There's that thing in between that I always ignore. Tell me about that.
So it's basically the management of, talk about management of the device itself. So making sure that the password policy makes sense, making sure that it's up to date, making sure that it's secure. So that's when we talk about, you know, being able to manage that. And overall, the concept of management is really, you know, when it comes to what we do, it really sort of centers in on, you have a bunch of people, you have a bunch of different IT resources. You're creating a matrix of those two combinations, and you're trying to understand what are those two connections. And you have a person that plays a role in your organization. There's a bunch of IT resources. What should they have access to? And as an IT person, you're sort of managing those connections. So that's really the concept.
Okay, let me talk about my first sponsor, and then I want to come back and ask you about this mistake that you made at every single company. I don't know how you keep making the same mistake except JumpCloud and what we can take away from it. But first, the sponsor is ActiveCampaign. Do you know ActiveCampaign, or am I about to blow your mind with this?
No, you're about to blow my mind.
All right. Fantastic. Good. All right. You know about email marketing, right? There are tons of different providers for email marketing. The problem is that a lot of them are very simplistic, right? Where you just can broadcast email newsletters, and nobody wants email newsletters, but also content in them may not be appropriate for whoever it is that you're sending to. Or they're super sophisticated, where they will understand that you've said that you're an IT professional. They'll understand what software you're using, and then they'll automatically send out the right message, but they're insane to manage. And ActiveCampaign said, you know what? What if it was simpler? What if we can actually say, do you guys have two different products?
We have one product. Everything's one product. Yeah.
Okay. Imagine if you had two different products. Imagine if you had one for small business, one for enterprise, right? Small business meaning startups, because you just want to cultivate them, and enterprise because those are your biggest and sweetest customers. Imagine if someone like me just kept going into all the small business articles on your website, and you guys have lots of great content, and was watching videos about how businesses of five people can actually manage their accounts properly. And you could tag me. And you could then start to email me differently from someone who was looking at enterprise. Maybe someone who was looking at all the enterprise articles and enterprise videos would get an email that says, if you want a demo, we have people standing by to do a demo. Here's our calendar for availability. And someone like me who's just getting started, you could say, you may just have a 5-person operation, but you have to think about when you have 50 and 500 people, and here's how to get started right. And in fact, we'll even give you a free account until you get to your 10 people. So you're messaging us, each one of us, differently based on what we're seeing on your website. You can do it based on what we click, etc. And if it's a demo, you could even have ActiveCampaign fire off a text message that says, you've got a demo scheduled with Steve right now. Here's the phone number so you can call up and dial in. That's the kind of automation that they have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I feel like I should just be an explainer video.
Well, you explained our business really well, really simply too. So, yeah.
Thanks. I was working on it. So anyone out there who wants to try this, I'm going to give you a free trial at a special URL. I'm also going to tell you that if you do sign up, you're going to get a month of free service, which means your second month actually is going to be free. I think that this stuff is so powerful and easy that you can get started on your own, especially if you're a Mixergy listener, or Mixergy interviewee. But if you want it, I urge you to take advantage of the fact that they're going to give us two free one-on-one sessions with their consultants. So you get on a call, you tell them what you're doing, they tell you how you can achieve it with ActiveCampaign, they set you out in the world to use it, and then you come back and you have a second session with them to make sure that you've used it and to adjust what you're going to do next. And finally, if you use a special URL I'm about to give you, you're going to get free migration. So if you're with a simple, overly simplistic, or overly complicated email provider, ActiveCampaign will migrate you for free. So here's a URL. It's activecampaign.com/Mixergy. activecampaign.com/Mixergy. All right. The mistake. Do you know the one that I'm talking about? I saw you smile as I mentioned it.
Yeah.
What was it?
I think I do. I think she was talking about sales and hiring salespeople, if I remember right.
That's actually not it. Tell me about that mistake.
Okay.
Tell me. I'll come back to the mistake I have in my notes.
Oh, you got a bunch of them then. So the sales mistake is, I think we've always scaled sales much faster than we needed to. So the sales team, if you will. So it's a common mistake, and we talk about it a bunch in the book, which is you feel like you've got some traction, and so you scale up really fast. You hire a bunch of different salespeople, and you say, okay, well, we're going to go really hard, but the product's not quite there. The positioning's not quite there. The messaging's not quite there. The marketing plan's not quite there. You know, everything's not quite there. So it's sort of this false, you know, you get this early false hope of, you know, this thing can scale. And, you know, it's that first initial wave of customers that give you that. And usually we can go find that first wave of customers pretty well, but it's sort of that second wave or third wave that becomes really hard.
And at that point, you should be scaling, but not sooner.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, those are the hard won lessons of, you should really wait to scale sales until you're really confident that you have product market fit. It's going to go.
you know, on startupplaybook.com, the site that you guys created for the book, you have phenomenal quotes from phenomenal people. One of them is from Dharmesh Shah. Dharmesh at HubSpot, I thought he created an army of salespeople really fast and it worked for him. Do you have any insight into whether he did that or not?
I don't. So, but my guess is that Dharmesh probably had product market fit very fast, right? So if you feel like you've got it and, you know, then it's time to go. And that makes sense.
So that's a distinction. You're saying at times in the past, you had this need to get customers to find product market fit and you scaled up too fast.
Yeah, because the conversation around the board table is great. You know, we've got some success. We're starting to scale. We need to go bigger. We need to go harder. We need to grow the business faster. So the VCs are like, hey, you need to hire more salespeople.
Give me an example of a company where you did that, where you regret it.
I think all of them, except for JumpCloud, is the only one where we haven't done that. We haven't scaled the sales team as much because we have a much more self-serve product.
Yes, where you guys did that too? You had salespeople?
We did have salespeople. We didn't right away, but then very soon thereafter, we started to scale salespeople. And we went to larger enterprises. And it's one of those things where it's a drug. You get your first big deal and you're like, I can do more big deals like this. And you can achieve your goals faster if you do bigger deals, right?
So,
but it doesn't always work that way. Like that one deal that you got may be an aberration. It may be sort of that false point, right? It may not be the start of a trend. It just may be one data point.
And, you know, I didn't realize that Yesware would have salespeople. I thought it was all viral marketing. Didn't you guys also even have like a message on the bottom of emails that used Yesware?
We did, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of the first phase of the company was that. And we got a lot of customers that way. But then we also started to get bigger customers. We had some fantastic bigger customers. And then that pushed us to go
more and more salespeople.
And go up market.
You know what? The salespeople are so hidden in my like view of the startup world. It wasn't until I moved to San Francisco, for example, that I realized that, I remember I was second week in here. I had dinner with someone who happened to work for Box, but was a friend of my wife's. And I said, what do you do? And he said, I do sales for Box, box.com. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, and he started telling me about this whole process. I forget specifically what he said, but basically we all know the drill now, right? You see a major company use a domain from a major company. You start calling them up and you say, can we do a demo? And you get into the rest of the company. I had no idea this existed. Who's out there who's good at talking about that, at how to set up and scale a sales team for software? Because I don't think we talk much about that.
Oh, I think there's amazing people. So, I mean, I remember, Ben Horowitz's book, he talks about a few different people.
The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
Hard Thing About Hard Things. And he talks about some of the great, you know, sales leaders that he's hired and sort of the process and the approach. And, you know, there's people in the Valley who have done such a great job of it. And, you know, Ben's companies in the past have done a great job of it. But there's a lot of enterprise sales focused companies in the Valley that have done an amazing, amazing job.
I'd love to hear more of that how to. I'd love to know who the author is that they're reading. What's the process? What's the minimum viable product type of message from that world? And I know that you've got opinions about that, which I'll get to in a moment. But here's the thing that my producer put down here is actually, you know what? Maybe you guys are talking about the same thing. She said building too quickly. And did you mean just the salespeople, or were you in the past making a mistake of building overall the company too fast?
I think we were talking much more about sales in that
just
in
sales.
That context. Yeah, I think, you know, there's always a chance that you can build the company too quickly and, you know, you sort of lose control and it doesn't end up working out very well. That can happen. But I think that was less of an issue. It's always hard to hire engineers. So there's almost a governor on your growth because of that. Unless you're just some, you know, if you're a Facebook, you're an Uber where the dollars don't really matter, right? So you can hire at a ridiculous pace.
Most what about the product though? I kind of had the sense that maybe you were saying that we might have overthought the product. You weren't, you were smiling as I said, minimum viable product, because you said, hey, look, I'm selling to enterprise. I can't give them a minimal promise of a future, some value, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, minimum viable product is an interesting term, right? It's really sort of taken hold, but I don't love that term. I think it's a misnomer. I think you really want to focus on sort of minimum sellable, and it depends on your market. So if you're selling into enterprises, I think it's unlikely that you can show up with a product that's so lightweight that you built over, 90 days or, maybe a little bit longer. It's probably not reality that you're going to get much traction on that. So if you're selling to those style customers, you need a very deep product. Now, if you're selling to consumers, minimum viable might make a lot of sense. You know, you might be able to just get a very lightweight product out there and iterate on it a bunch. But I think in the book, we really talk a lot about this concept of minimum sellable and really taking your time at the beginning of the company to build a product that really matches up to what your customers want. And so we talk a lot about finding that group of customers that's a small set that you believe is representative of your overall market and just build an amazing product for those folks. And then you can always scale up over time, but get it right for that group. And that takes time. It takes a lot more time than you think.
How long did it take you?
At Jump Cloud, probably 2 years.
2 years of building it.
Yeah.
In constant conversations with your clients? Constant.
Yeah. I mean, people are like, it doesn't do enough yet. We needed to do more, or we needed to do it this way. Or, we like this feature. We can use this. This is great. But you need to go build these other things too. It's constant. And that doesn't mean that we couldn't generate revenue during that period of time. We did generate some revenue, but it's not a lot. And your focus at that time isn't about revenue. It's about, let's build a product that really matches the needs of what these people want.
So how did they change your vision of the product as you had conversations with them?
They come up with so many things that you've never thought of, right?
Do you remember one?
What would be one good example? Not one coming off the top of my head.
I'll tell you what, I am kind of putting you on the spot here, but
absolutely.
Again, I'm looking at my notes here and you were telling Ari, the first product was pretty simple. We took the concept of an LDAP, and I Wikipedia'd what LDAP stood for. But we took the product of it. We took a solution that was open source LDAP, and we're good. We got it up and running. And I thought what you guys did was say, this thing is open source. People needed hardware to make it work. We're going to remove the hardware and keep the rest of it. And then we'll outsmart the system. But that's not it.
That was just the first initial. We knew that that wasn't going to be enough, but that was the first thing we did, right? So that's
But that
where,
didn't take you 2 years.
That didn't take us 2 years. That took us maybe 6 months.
So, and then you sold that? Did you get a client to actually use it?
Yeah, we did. We did. Okay. But it was such a small piece of the overall product that people wanted. So it's basically we created a relationship with a set of customers and we said, we're going to solve one small minor pain point for you, and then we're going to grow with you. We're going to do a lot of the things that you want done. Some of them we agree with, some of them we don't. We'll figure that out together, but we'll go build a product that covers what we think is the opportunity and what you think is the opportunity. But we're going to start in one specific spot.
Okay. So maybe then the first was 6 months, not 2 years, but the right product was a 2-year journey. And the first clients came from your personal network.
Yeah, a lot of them came from personal network. And this is why you get the false hope, right? So we got our first wave of customers. And then all of a sudden, we're like, oh, now we can scale, right? But we resisted that urge. But at previous companies, that was the thing that we did. We said, okay, we've got a bunch of customers. This is great. Let's go scale. So we'll hire a bunch of salespeople. We'll do a bunch of marketing. We'll be much more aggressive and, the revenue will follow. Well, those first few customers, they bought because of, our relationship with them, because we worked with them very closely on the engineering front. But, you can't scale to be a large company working with every customer in that form and fashion. So it's false, right?
Who are the first customers? Do you remember them?
CrossFit was one of them, which I'm trying to remember. We have a lot of customers now. I can't even remember all of them, but, it was a lot of them were local companies here in Boulder. So Sovereign is a good example. I'll have to come up, Full Contact was another one. Yesware, was of course a early customer. So
Yesware, the company that you co-founded, Full Contact, a company invested in by Brad.
Yeah.
Right. Brad.
Yeah. A lot of the Foundry Group companies became our early customers and folks who gave us just tremendous feedback. So
let's talk about Brad Feld. You told our producer, I want to raise money here. I've got a track record. Dude, I got to tell you, I have my producer put together a list of companies that people were part of. this timeline is maybe the longest that I've had here, full of co-founder. It's not like advisor, advisor, advisor. There's some people who on their LinkedIn profile, they're advisor to everybody, right?
Yeah.
You got it. Why can't you just say, I want to raise money from these 20 people and go get your 20, or let's say three people and go get your 20, your three. What was the issue?
Well, there wasn't with Brad, right? I mean, Brad believed in it, and that's, you know, that's been the great thing. It's just when we, and Brad was fantastic, and the Foundry Group team, Seth now, who's on our board, they've been incredible supporters of us. It was when we went to get the round outside of Foundry where people were like, I don't think this is going to work.
They don't just bank on, I know Jason Calacanis likes to say, bet on the jockey, not the horse, which is actually not the way it works in horse racing, right? We don't know who won any of these. We know the names of the horses. We don't know the riders. But it is the way that people invest. They weren't just saying, hey, here's a jockey who's actually found all the right horses. Here's a person who's had all these hits. Just blindly put money into him. You don't get that.
It's not true, right? That's the problem. That's the conventional wisdom, right? But it's not true. It might be true in certain cases that they bet on the jockey, but it's largely untrue. It's a nice, you know, it's a nice statement for people to say that, oh, you know, we always bet on the team. But it's not true.
They don't. I mean, and they were afraid of what?
They're afraid of a lot of things, right? I mean, first of all, you're a company going up against, you know, the largest software company in the world, that has, you know, a complete lock on the market. We're out of Boulder, Colorado. It's not San Francisco. You know, there's n number of reasons that we heard, right? And it's, it comes down to ultimately, you know, does it match a pattern that they've seen before? And, you know, it probably didn't match a pattern that they've seen before. Now, we were fortunate. We ran into this firm called OpenView out of Boston, who we matched, you know, the stuff that they really look at, which is enterprise B2B, you know, expansion stage, you know, SaaS companies. And they said, we understand what you're doing. We understand your challenges. We understand your problems. And we understand what the movie looks like here and how it's going to play out. And they got excited and they invested. And
this is, you know, OpenView Partners?
Yeah, OpenView Partners.
I didn't realize that. They're not on your angel list profile. But I'll tell you who I do see. I see Battery Ventures, Golden Ventures, Google Ventures, which then became GV, right?
And those are investors in Yesware. So those are all our investors in Yesware.
And IDG. So,
yeah, IDG. And actually, IDG is now Ridge Venture, and they are an investor in Jump Cloud as well. So Pat Keneally, who has been
I'm looking at Yesware, right?
Yeah,
I clicked on your profile. It took me to Yesware and Angel List.
And, you know, Pat has been somebody that we've worked with for, you know, almost 20 years as well. So, you know, you build all these great long-term relationships, and Brad and Pat have worked together on a number of things. So,
I see it. But again, I still don't see Open Ventures. But
Open,
this is the problem with AngelList. Yeah. This is why I have to talk to the person directly.
Yeah.
Bullet Ventures, Galvanized Ventures, and Foundry Group. It's interesting that you had a problem, that you had a challenge. Do you think in retrospect that if you could go back and rephrase it, that you'd find a way to explain this to them, to convince them?
I don't think so.
You don't? It's just the way it is.
I think it's the way it is. I think, look, at the end of the day, we were a company that had some traction. We had some interesting technology, but we didn't fit a pattern for them that really was something that they had conviction around. And that's okay, right? I mean, ultimately, we did find the right partner for us, which is, you know, two major partners, Foundry Group, who has been with us since the beginning, and then OpenView Partners. And OpenView, they understand our size, our scale, our type of business incredibly, incredibly well. And so when they saw us, they were like, yeah, this is what we do for a living. We work with people like you.
Why don't you feel comfortable saying what your revenues are? I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I just feel like I thought companies that sold to enterprise seem not to want to talk about it. I'm trying to understand why.
We sell to SMEs mainly, right? So, you know, I think it's the wonderful part of being private, right? You don't have to share all those things that public companies do. You don't have to have that same level of scrutiny around all those factors. And, you know, we do a lot of different things, that we don't share publicly. And for us, we're a security business. So we also try and generally keep a low profile. And we try and have our customers keep a low profile too. So, in general, it's been about, for me, much more about let's talk about the substance. Let's deliver a great product. Let's deliver a great experience. It's not really about how much money we've raised. It's not about the revenue. It's about, let's make sure we solve that problem for that customer and do a great job. And as long as we do that, everything else will take care of itself. And that's what we talk about with our team a lot. We really do believe in that. It's, you know, if you build something of real value for your customer, you're going to be just fine.
Okay. You know what? And I'm glad also that you corrected me and said that you guys go after small, medium-sized businesses. I think the reason that I always think of you as an enterprise company is because you keep talking to the tech professional, and I don't think of small businesses or the IT department. I don't think of small businesses as having an IT department. Or is it just the content that I saw?
No, you're right. Every small business has somebody that does this. So every single company on the planet in some way has to connect their users to some IT resource, whether that's their computer, whether that's G Suite, it's Office 365, somebody's doing it. So whether that person's the owner, they're an IT person or an engineer, it varies, right? And so that's the interesting thing about this opportunity is that, you know, in SMEs, they have a huge problem doing this and they want a lot of efficiency. They don't have a ton of people, and we can offer them that efficiency, that control, and that security. And if they don't have an IT person, there's a whole group of MSPs out there who basically go and manage these companies. And so they love our product too, because they're like, well, we can use this product to manage our customers. And so that's why we love this category. It's a really super interesting category from that perspective, because you're offering a tremendous amount of value to the customer. You're unlocking their ability to go use technology ultimately.
MSP, that's a managed service provider. So there are these businesses, like I'm assuming law firms, for example, don't want to have to deal with their own IT. They don't want the office manager to do it. So there's a company out there that does it for them. And if there's a computer that needs to be set up, they do it. Yeah. Okay. I'll talk about my second sponsor, and then I want to jump right into why you guys don't do cold calling or didn't in the beginning and what you did instead. Second company is TopTal. Do you know TopTal?
I don't.
All right. You know what? I always think that everyone knows TopTal. This is a company that Andreessen Horowitz backed. They're just growing phenomenally. Here's their premise. They said, look, hiring developers is really tough. What if we put together these really challenging tests that will draw the best developers into our network? And then when a company needs to hire a developer, they just come to us and we'll talk to them and then we'll go and match them with the right people in our network who they could work with part-time, full-time, sometimes even a whole team of people will get scaled up at once. And because of that, they've just been growing phenomenally. They also won't let me talk about what their revenues are, even though I think it's impressive. And they're here at Mixergy for a long time, about 2 or 3 years of ads constantly, because it's just been doing so well with our audience. So if anyone out there is looking to hire a developer or a team of developers, full-time, part-time, project basis, whatever it is, I want you to go check out this URL where they're going to give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. They really want to make sure that you get the right person. Go to this URL and just set up a conversation with someone at TopTal. If it's not a good fit, they'll tell you. If it is, they'll tell you, and then you don't have to hire someone unless you love them. And once you do, you can often get started within a day or two. Here's a URL. It's toptal.com/mixergy. Top is on top of your head. Tal is in talent. toptal.com/mixergy. I love that I get to introduce you to stuff.
I know. It's pretty cool.
Cold calling. What is the traditional model, and then why did you eschew it?
Yeah. So the traditional model of selling into businesses, let's say, it's mainly selling into enterprises, is that you do a bunch of cold calls and you might send them direct mail back in the old days, right? But somehow you're trying to get them to take your call, take your meeting, and, you know, appointment setting, if you will. And you're going to talk to them on the phone, or you're going to do a presentation, and you're going to try and get them interested in what you're selling. And we just always looked at that for what we were doing as a hugely inefficient way to generate clients and to share with them what we're working on. So we sort of said, let's flip it on its head. So from our perspective, the person that we're going after is the IT admin, the IT person, and these people are incredibly savvy. They want to know what it is we're doing at a technical level. They want to play with the product. They want to actually touch it and see, does this work for me? And so we said, well, why don't we just try and drive them to try the product themselves? And we're not going to sit there and sell them. Let the product sell itself, if you will. But we have to let them know it exists. And we're going to let them know it exists by sharing with them some of the problems that we see out there and how to solve those problems through written content. And so just a different way to do it. And we found that to be much more efficient for us.
Meaning blog articles that explain how to handle what?
You know, how to build a cloud LDAP system, or how to connect a Mac to Active Directory, or, you know, how to build a secure Wi-Fi infrastructure. So there's all these problems that IT people face that we can actually have some insight into helping them with. And so let's write about it. And then if we've done a good job of sharing our knowledge and our information, then maybe that generates some credibility with them to go try our product at some point.
So I've had pluses and minuses with your content strategy. The plus is, I emailed you before we started. I was watching this video by, what's his name?
Greg Keller.
He's your product guy, right?
Yeah, he is.
What's his official title?
Chief Product Officer.
Chief Product Officer is just standing at a whiteboard. Not great video quality, which I'm fine with. And the reason I know it's not great video quality is because I watch so many of his videos, the audio level is different on each one. So I had to raise and lower. But he explains things super clearly. Yeah. I wouldn't understand what you guys do unless you had this kind of content out there. It was phenomenal. And so I had to write you like a love note about how great your videos were.
Which I appreciated.
And then the other thing was, I was looking for competitors to Jump Cloud, and you guys are so SEO'd up the wazoo that every time I look for a competitor to Jump Cloud, it's basically an article written by you.
Yeah,
here, Jump Cloud competitors. Here is the first three responses. Differences between Better Cloud and Jump Cloud Directory as a Service. That's on jumpcloud.com's blog. Active Directory competitors. That's on jumpcloud.com/blog. And Cloud Identity Management competitors. jumpcloud.com/blog. Where in your background do you get this content marketing strategy? I don't understand how you bring this to such a tech heavy company.
There's nothing in my background and there's nothing in our background as a company that taught us this. I think we just sort of stumbled upon it and we said, hey, you know, our profile of the person that we're trying to work with and sell to is they're looking for real data, real content, real information, and it has to be high quality. So, you know, we don't think a lot of slick marketing or sales is going to work with that particular audience. It might work with a different audience, but for our audience, I don't think it's going to work. I think what they want is, you know, they want to know the truth. They want to know detailed explanations, technical explanations about, you know, how to solve their problems. And if we can do that in a credible way, then maybe they'll give us a look at some point and they'll say, maybe these guys could actually help me.
So I'm looking at a page called Active Directory, a registered trademark circle right next to the word Active Directory competitors. At the top is reserve a seat for, I guess it's a webinar. That's really prominently displayed there. There's a button that says demo, also got my attention, where I can, I guess, schedule a demo or try for free. So the whole thing is about, we want to show it to you any way you want to see it. Hit this button. Tell us a little bit about the size of your organization and your needs, and then we'll set you up with a way to see it. And then from there, you follow up often with a human being and a sale. How did you come across that? What was the process to develop that sales process?
You know, it goes back to who the person we're selling to. They absolutely, I don't believe they're going to buy a product like our product without actually trying it. So we can try. I mean, we could go try and hand wave and say, hey, you know, there's all these people who use it and, you know, you should just buy it sight unseen. I just don't think that's reality. I think they want to try it. So we have to make it super easy for them to actually engage with the product. And if they try the product and they like it, then they'll move forward because they believe it's actually a quality solution. And if they don't like it, then we should make it easy for them to throw it away and we don't impact them, right?
How do you try that? I wish I'd gone through a trial just to get a sense of how can I try creating a user directory or team directory in software and then throwing it away?
Yeah, so it's actually super easy. So you can just sign up for an account and then you add a few users. And let's say you have G Suite, you just connect them to G Suite, or, you know, you want to connect them to their laptop.
You guys have two-way sync with G Suite. So every user in G Suite would automatically have an account in Jump Cloud. Am I right?
Yeah. So we import it in and then, you know, we become the controlling authority for that. And then if you want to add a new one, then you can just create that person in JumpCloud and then it automatically gets created in G Suite. And the same thing can happen with your machine too, effectively. Like we can, you know, if you have a new Mac that you got, then we can create your account on that Mac.
I see, the login account to the Mac, and then the software that goes on the Mac, you guys also control that?
Yeah. So basically you put a little agent on your machine and then, you know, we control the user access to that machine.
I don't want to sound like a senator interviewing Mark or questioning Mark Zuckerberg with like my basic questions.
But you got 2 days of it.
But then if one of my users then uses Google's G Suite to log into new software and create an account there, you guys manage that and we could delete them if I want to, right?
Straight off of G Suite, yeah. We can delete them from G Suite.
And then couldn't I do that as a G Suite admin anyway if they go and create another account that they sign into with G Suite?
Of course. Yeah, you can do that with G Suite, but you can't then do that on their Mac, or you can't do that on AWS, or you can't do that on their on-prem, you know, Jira Atlassian account. So, you know, it sort of cascades from there. So, you know, you can do it inside of G Suite. So Google does a wonderful job there. AWS does a wonderful job for AWS. Microsoft O365 does a wonderful job for O365. Who's pulling all of that together?
Right? And I can't with Google log into Amazon Web Services. I see what you mean. Right. Okay.
So, and why would they want you to, right? I mean, that's not, I mean, Google wants you to use Google Cloud Platform. AWS wants you to use their products, right? And so I think this is a very interesting part of our space, which is there's all these big players who have very specific interests that are aligned to themselves. And, you know, from our perspective, we said, what's the alignment with the customer? What do they want? And we think the world has moved towards, you know, multiple platforms. And so if you've moved to multiple platforms, then you need something that integrates all those different platforms together in a neutral way.
Macs, Linux, Windows also. Are people using Linux that much? Is there that much use for Linux at a desk?
Yeah. Yeah. All of our developers have Linux, Linux laptops. So we could be different than other folks, but I don't think so. I think that's pretty common. We don't do iPads, but we don't see a lot of iPads for, you know, our size company. Like we're not using iPads internally. Really for much of anything business related.
You know, let me go back a little bit just to understand you. You said that there was part of a school that was just bullshit classes. What part and what did you do about that? Just to get a sense of who you are as a person.
Well, I don't remember what Ari's talking about, but, you know, I told her that when I went to high school, basically I finished up in 3 years. And the idea was basically I did half my day at this new school that was created, a magnet school for math and science. And then the other half of the day was at a public high school. And so it was like a really interesting, you know, education, right? Because half my day was going to just doing math and science at this school that's totally different than the public school. And then public school, I'm doing, you know, basically English and social studies and, you know, phys ed, things like that. And so as I got through school, I was 3 years in and I said, you know, I've basically taken all the credits. So why am I sticking around for another year? What value is there?
And you just left. But you did graduate, right?
I did. Yeah. They didn't really want to give me, my diploma. And at that point I didn't really care because I'd been accepted into MIT. So, but they did end up giving me my diploma, but it was an interesting experience because it was different than the normal process, right? So when it's different than the normal process, people don't necessarily know how to handle that. So the first inclination was, well, you can't do that. Like you can't leave after 3 years. Like we don't do that here. You go for 4 years, but we're like, I've done all the courses. So why, I mean, what am I doing? Am I just sticking around for courses that don't really matter? And then the next point was, well, okay, you can do this, but we're not going to give you a diploma because we don't want to make it that everybody else will start doing this, right? So then it's sort of like, well, let's rein you in because, you know, okay, you're going to go do this. But we don't want anybody else to get any ideas that they could do this. And then finally they relented. But at that point when they relented, it didn't really matter because I'd already been accepted.
And you just did it because you love the challenge. You love learning. Is that what it was? Or were you someone who didn't have a lot of friends and this was your way of dealing with the world?
No, it was more about challenge. I think, you know, for me, it's always been about how do you be the best at what you do? So, you know, at that time, the best was I was a student, right? How do I be the best at being a student, right? And so, you know, I figured out I can graduate in 3 years and then I can go to a school that I want to go to. And that's a really hard school. And so I got challenged a lot there. And, you know, when I was there, I did different things to challenge myself in different ways. And ultimately it ended actually with me starting a company in my senior year. So, which turned out to be a different challenge. And then you're on this journey of, you know, how do you become, you know, a great founder and a great CEO over time? And that's a hard thing to do.
All right. I feel like we didn't cover, I feel like your PR people might not be happy that I didn't cover enough about the startup playbook. But you and I had a good conversation that the audience is going to appreciate. Is there one thing that we should tell people to, we could leave people? Here's one thing that I'm going to point out. You guys picked the name, The Startup Playbook. There are like three other books already called The Startup Playbook.
There are. Yeah. Yeah. We just felt like the name was such the right name for our book. And it really is just a playbook. And, you know, I think the core thing about the book that we hope everybody takes away is this concept of, you know, we sort of call it vetting your idea. And really going deep, and it's a big chunk of the book, and I really hope entrepreneurs find that valuable. So first time entrepreneurs, I think, will find it really valuable. It's a way to really make sure that what you spend your life's time on is worth it, and there's not everything that we all come up with is worth our time. So this really is just like let's really go deep on a concept to make sure that it's the right one to focus on.
It's that vetting process, the circle that you guys explain in the book.
Yeah. It's the vetting process.
All right. If you guys out there want to try it, go check it out at startup-playbook.com or frankly, go to Amazon or any other book place. It's all over there. And, if you want to win, I'll tell you that now anytime I type in startup playbook anywhere, your book is the only one that comes up. So, cool. I don't have to tell people to watch out that they're going to get the wrong book, but it's an honor to have you on here. I'm really glad that you're doing this, and I feel like, you know, Warren Buffett wants the richest people in the world to donate as much of their money as possible. He's working on that. He's actually actively making phone calls. So is Bill Gates. I feel like the money is going to disappear 100 years from now, but the ideas that these people have had, the thought process is what is even more valuable and will outlive them maybe for thousands of years. I'd love to see more people like you who've done a lot say, here's my thinking of how I did this. Here's what I did that is useful for the next group of entrepreneurs. And so you did it. And the book is called The Startup Playbook. Guys, go get it. Let me know what you think of it. And Jump Cloud is another place that you might want to go check out. I had no idea this technology existed. Frankly, I knew about your other stuff. I didn't know about Jump Cloud, and I'm glad that I got to know it. All right. And finally, the two sponsors who I've had here who make this interview possible is the number one, the company that will help you do email marketing right. It's called activecampaign.com/Mixergy. And the second one will help you hire right. It's called toptal.com/Mixergy. Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.